What's up, everybody? This is episode 90 of the ClapperCast, back at you with another episode. I'm Burke, and like most episodes, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, beard's coming in nice. How's it going today?
You know, I've got the salt shaker ready here. We had a very controversial week around the NHL, and we're gonna break out the salt here for a bit. So let's jump right into it.
Yeah. Yeah, and for once, it's not me. I feel like I'm kind of the salt lord of ClapperCast, so I'm glad that I'm not salty. Not that you are either, but just fans in general. And yeah, of course, we're talking about Tom Wilson. So it's been, I guess about a week since that kind of all went down.
Yeah, I think that happened a week ago today.
So yeah, it was like right after our episode. I feel like all the cool stuff in the league always happens like right after we record.
Yeah, and then as we're recording,
our episode comes out after it. So it's like, yeah, it was right after, because I remember telling you about how he was doing that weird like T pose in the box.
Yeah,
right after we ended our recording. So yeah, I mean, Tom Wilson, he got really mad, and ragged all Artemi Panarin around. But before he did that, he punched Buchnevich on the ground. Yeah, I mean, I feel like you could probably break it down a bit better than me. So why don't you take it away as the unbiased, non-Capital fan.
Okay, so end of a play. Puck is in the goaltender area. I think Vanecek had it in control or was up against his pad or something. Buchnevich starts going after the rebound, trying to slam that in, and he ends up kicking Vanecek's pad. At that point, Tom Wilson's nearby, and he takes Buchnevich down. He's... I don't know if his stick was on the back of his neck or wrapped around it.
I can't remember. I think somebody else pushed him from behind Buchnevich, and Tom Wilson was in front of him.
Okay,
and then Buchnevich like fell on his stick right in front of him.
Yeah.
While Tom Wilson was like on his...
Yeah.
He was like kind of going down with him, I think.
Yeah, so it was like the stick was either on his neck or around the front of it. And then Wilson kind of falls down and, you know, like is pretty much on Buchnevich's head. He's kind of like crouched down above it. Then he tosses him an extra punch in the shoulder, neck, slash head area for whatever reason. Then scrum breaks out from that. I think Ryan Strome's involved in there trying to get Wilson off. And then Panarin comes in at some point to get Wilson off of Strome or out of the scrum. Panarin kind of grabs him from behind and pulls him out. Then Wilson
jumps
and Panarin
on his back.
Panarin starts, or Wilson and Panarin start going at it. And then Panarin ends up losing his helmet. Wilson takes him down with some weird slam move, and then starts ragdolling him around. And then that was pretty much the end of it. The refs kind of separated that and, gave Wilson a misconduct. I think Buchnevich came in at some point to get Wilson off of Panarin and got a roughing penalty out of that. I think that covers most of the key parts of the initial incident, anyways.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, so I obviously know my take. We've kind of texted a bit about it, since last Monday, but what's your initial take on the play itself?
It's just a typical Tom Wilson thing. He takes it overboard. He doesn't seem to know when to stop. And, you fall on a guy in a scrum, that's fine. It happens. Like, you're on skates, you're on ice, you're going to fall and land on each other, but why does he have to take the extra punch? Panarin comes in, jumps on you, grabs you, pulls you back. Okay, fine. Like, Panarin's willing to engage there, so why do you have to slam him? Why not just grab his collar and jab him a few times, face wash him like most other players would, especially when he's not fighting back? Why do you have to grab him and slam him down and then continue to ragdoll him around and do all that extra stuff? That's the overboard part. He totally should have gotten suspended for at least a game just to get him out of the next game, because at this point too, it ends up risking the safety of everybody else, because you've got a heated Rangers team coming in knowing that there's going to be however many fights they had. They all dropped the gloves at the opening faceoff. You've got the risk of someone taking a run at someone on the Capitals. We ended up with Buchnevich cross-checking
after Wilson was out of the game.
Yeah.
I'll point out
cross-checking Mantha in the face and
getting suspended.
yeah the only suspension out of this entire thing was Buchnevich in the game afterwards, but he totally should have gotten a game just because the actions are overboard. Like, there's no issue with him engaging with someone in a scrum in that way. It's just, why did you have to take it to the next level, and why didn't you stop? It was just unnecessary at that point.
Yeah, I think it's unnecessary, but I don't agree that it's a suspendable play, because in my mind, there's no precedent for suspensions like that. And I know you brought up like the Zach Kassian with Matt Tkachuk example, because it's like a similar situation where Kassian's kind of ragdolling him around. But in my mind, that's different because Kassian had gloves off and was punching him, and Kassian wasn't, Tkachuk wasn't a willing participant at any point in that, as you know, is well witnessed or easily determined in by watching that play, because Tkachuk hits him.
Yeah, he takes a massive run in play, but he kind of turtles right after and doesn't engage after.
And then, yeah, he doesn't want to do anything after that. And so, like, you can, you know, I guess interpret that different ways. But to me, in this one, Wilson has his gloves on the whole time, and yes, he's punching him, but he's not, you know, Wilson is not afraid to throw the gloves off, so he's not fighting him. It's not like a one-way fight. And Panarin jumps on his back, and so Wilson doesn't know who it is right off the bat, and he's a fiery guy and gets caught up in it, and then throws him down. And so to me, it's just like a, you know, I don't see there being a suspendable play. There's a finable thing, and they find the punch, which I think was pretty soft, but like the actual roughing play was definitely, like, I would say, an extreme response. But, you know, these are teams that have played each other a lot this season. The Caps are getting ready for playoffs. You know, things are ramping up, and I feel like as a play in and of itself, not suspendable, but if you're considering, like, okay, well, do we want shit to not pop off next game? Maybe then you consider it. But if you're looking at the play in itself, I don't think it's suspendable. But like, from like a, you know, you hear referees talking about game management. What about like series management?
Yeah. See, that's right? Another one, because the Department of Player Safety ultimately has the obligation to protect the players. And going into this next game, knowing exactly what's going to happen, and to still have Tom Wilson go into the game, you know, the Rangers don't feel vindicated that, you know, anything's happened to match what happened in the initial game, the injury, the play itself. So they're going to feel like they have to take it into their own hands. Hockey players do this all the time. That's the whole role of fighting in the game, is players self-policing. But at a certain point, it just ends up turning into like some vigilante justice thing where the players have to go and take the entire thing into their own hands. And that's kind of, I feel like that's the dangerous part, where someone's going to take a run or some sort of massive cheap shot that just keeps escalating it further and further.
Yeah. And like, hockey's weird because, like in the Edler knee on Hyman, Edler did get suspended, right? He got a game for that. Or did he get two?
Two games.
So he got suspended. When they played the Leafs next, they still fought him.
See, it was an isolated one, though. It was just Edler. Like,
yeah.
This wasn't, I mean, you know, this was like six or seven fights in that Caps Rangers rematch, and however many.
Yeah,
other
that's what
penalties.
I'm saying, though. That's what I'm saying, is that, like, Wilson was the guy that they wanted, and then they went after the whole team, and they continued to do that after Wilson was out of the game, which when Buchnevich did. I mean, break down the Buchnevich thing. The game, this was like the second period, and the Caps had, I think there's already like five fights at this point. Might have been six. And then Mantha was kind of going after Buchnevich, like tapping him in the butt. Not like crazy slashes or anything, just like a, hey.
Trying to engage him, like
let's
him up.
Do this. And then Buchnevich, like, I mean, I don't want to use, like, you know, hyperbole, but he basically jumps into a cross-check into his face. I don't know if I'm overstepping that. It seems like that's what the play was.
Now,
jumps into a cross check.
He went for a high cross check, basically. Like, that's not too much of an exaggeration.
And it wasn't like a, oh, that rode up your shoulder or whatever. It was, yeah, like, no, I'm going. I think it clipped the visor a little bit, which is great for Mantha, because that's lucky. Because if he got right in the face, like a direct hit. Anyway, so he gets him with that, and then he got ejected. I think he got a five in a game or something like that. And then got suspended one game. So I agree with that. Like, as a, there's a precedent for headshots.
Oh yeah, you don't cross check a guy in the face.
And that's an isolated incident. So, yeah, it's like, I just don't know where I sit on the, that all happened because there wasn't a suspension. Like, I think the fights happened and everything, and then it was just like, the game went from there. But it's like, okay, well, Wilson already fought a guy. He answered.
Like, there'd absolutely be fights if Wilson had gotten suspended. That still would have happened. Someone would have fought someone. But I think it takes some of the emotion out of it, and especially, I mean, the Rangers had their Broadway drama statement released. Like, it shows, like, the team, the organization, and, like, some of the comments from, say, I think it was Ryan Strome. It just shows how much emotion they had in there, and it's just a way to manage that and take that down just a notch instead of having it potentially there to blow over into something really bad.
Yeah, it was kind of like a powder keg situation.
Yeah.
It's just, like, I because I don't see it as a suspendable play in on its own, like, I just am wondering, like, where that comes into play, because it's like, yeah, you have to know that if you don't do anything, that the next game is against each other. It's not like there's like, oh, they play against each other like later in the season. It's like, no, it's like tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so it's like, where does that come into play? And I just haven't quite wrestled with that idea in my mind of just like, does the Department of Player Safety have, like, where does their kind of like obligation lie? It's like, do they call it how they see it? Or do they like, hey, given the context of these two teams play again tomorrow, do we punish this more severely than what we think it's worth as an isolated incident? You know,
like, yeah, that's just a hard one, because then you're getting into a lot of like random discretionary stuff. Like, you know, this might not be much of a suspension, but they play again the next day and it never really got answered in the game. So, you know, do we just suspend?
Yeah, because
over suspend for no precedent, no reason, really.
Yeah, because kind of, I mean, we should say, like, Wilson didn't leave that game and stayed in the game. Panarin, I think he originally was in the penalty box, because I remember seeing him in the penalty box after that play. And then at some point, I think he left the game. And he did enter that game because he did have, I think, a slight issue at the morning skate. And so he came in with, like, a little questionable status.
Yeah, it's probably like and a so maintenance I think, rest day type thing.
Yeah, so I think like either when he got like thrown around by Tom Wilson, not on a first name basis, that either he tweaked what was kind of bothering him, or it was something to do with like being slammed on the ice. I don't know, but I just like for the Rangers and from like hockey media, like because I think that play happens a lot. I mean,
it
like,
does.
The very next day, Crosby wrestled with Konechny on the Flyers. I mean, one of your all-stars for your fantasy team, Brady Tkachuk. I mean, he does that sort of stuff all the time.
And even the slam move, like, that type of thing happens in actual fights. I mean, Darnell Nurse did it the end of the week against Zach MacEwen.
Yeah, he does this he's losing the fight, and then he literally grabs, like, his undercarriage just on his pants and like slams him to the ice, and it's like, okay, but then that's like a willing combat. So
that's
like
that's
almost like a legal thing, right?
That's
where it's
my
like
difference on it is that
where does
Artemi
Panarin's consent to be involved in this end, and where does it start? And I think that, you know, he knows that it's Tom. He knows that it's Tom Wilson. Again, I keep saying Tom. I'm not his friend. I don't know him. But he knows it's Tom Wilson. He engages with him. He knows Tom Wilson is a tough bastard, and then stuff starts losing, and now it's like, oh, I didn't want to be in this. So it's like, well, you kind of engaged him, and then Tom Wilson ended it. I saw like Jeff O'Neill, he was kind of talking about it, and he said like, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Right, and then like get upset when you get shot. It's like that's for me. That's kind of how I see that play, and it's like, so I don't know. I guess I kind of like lie in the middle. Like I agree that he shouldn't have been suspended, but I also see like the benefit of suspending him. And so it's like, I don't know. It's really kind of a tough.
It is
mental
it's because it's Tom Wilson.
Me.
The incident gets completely blown out of proportion compared to what it would be for most other players. Like there's so much emotion and vitriol towards him and what he does around, you know, every single season. getting...
And it's a star player, too.
Like, yeah, on the and on Panarin. So, you know,
like, if
yeah,
that was Colin Blackwell or something, like, I don't know if there would have been quite the outcry. No shame on him, but, like, you know, like, just kind of the status of that player, I think, definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, the status of both players involved makes it, you know, blown bigger than it would otherwise. But, yeah, it's just hard to see, like, the... Like, Panarin engages, he starts it, but it's just the escalation that Wilson takes it to is what kind of gets it for me, where he just doesn't stop. You know, it's like, does the battle match, or, like, does what he does match what Panarin did to instigate? You know, could it have been solved with the, you know, shove him up against the boards and jab him in the jaw or whatever a couple times, like most other guys do?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, does the level of aggression match the initial thing?
I don't
think it does. I mean, I think that he gets caught by surprise by a guy who jumps him from behind and then doesn't. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, you're in the heat of the moment. Like, you're not going to be like, oh, like, back up. I don't know. It's just tough to analyze the play. And like I said, like, while I don't think it's a suspendable play, I see the value in suspending him based on that, because it's Tom Wilson and because of the team's playing so soon after that. And then I will say, as a Capitals fan, I did not enjoy that second game. Like, I mean, there's some humor in it, like seeing like all these fights and stuff, but like, I don't want to see like six fights and a guy get cross-checked in the face.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's a sideshow. It's like, it's
in like game 54 or whatever of like the regular season. Like, it's just like, we got to get like, the team's like dead already right now going into playoffs. Like, Kuznetsov is like, I don't know, like, I don't know what, like, he's either AWOL or AFK or something. Like, he's somewhere. And then like, Ovechkin's still hurt. And, you know, Backstrom, I think, missed the last game.
Backstrom
and Sonar's been out. And so, like,
yeah,
the Capitals are not afraid to do maintenance days. Like, they've done that before. We're like, and then Oshie left the last game too. So it's like, I just don't want the team to have to like fight in a meaningless game, risk injury. Like, Lars Eller was fighting. He got a concussion like earlier in the year. Like, Oshie was like, I'm glad he didn't fight, but it looked like he was gonna. And I was like, dude, your dad passed away because of Alzheimer's, which we should definitely talk about in a second, which is linked to, you know, brain injury, and he's had a lot of concussions. So it's like, don't, if there's a player in the league that shouldn't, it's you. And so anyway, I didn't enjoy that. Like, the initial face-off, it was like, okay, Nick Dowd and Garnet Hathaway, yeah, they're fighters, but then like, you've got Carl Hagelin, like, he was in a fight. It's like, he's not a fighter. Like, why?
Yeah. Well,
why does he have to like step up for this? Like, why didn't you just put Tom out like right
and,
off
and
the
on
bat?
On the Rangers side, they started with Kevin Rooney, who is probably one of their more physical guys. But then they had Colin Blackwell and Phil DiGiuseppe.
And like
forwards.
Chara's out there, and like, nobody wants to dance with Chara, which is like, yeah, fine. You don't expect like a 5'10" forward to like fight Chara, but it's like, why not just put Tom out there right off the face off, have him fight Brendan Smith or whoever, and then that's the guy who should fight. And then, I don't know, it's just like, even the Caps broadcast crew were like, this, like, I don't know, it was like, the first 5 minutes, there was like six fights or whatever, and then like, they're like, someone made like a pass, and they're like, oh wow, like, we're actually watching hockey here.
Yeah.
Like, come on, like,
that's the thing for me. It's just like, that entire thing was just a sideshow attraction. Like, it wasn't much of an interesting game to watch. Like, I had it on just to see what happened, but like, you don't really pay much attention because it just kind of gets boring.
Well, and like, you just risk injury. Like,
exactly.
The Buchnevich cross check to Mantha's face. Like, I thought he was seriously injured there for a second. Thank God he wasn't, but like, it could have went really downhill. I think after that point, it kind of got a little more under control, because they started dishing out tens, and Tom Wilson did not come back, which, like, whether he was hurt or not, right call.
Oh yeah.
Right call.
Oh yeah. I think it was probably like, he might've hurt his hand a little bit, but they were like, ah, we'll just play it safe and take you out just to kill the emotion down a bit.
which leads to the supporting argument, or supports the argument of suspension.
Yeah.
Kill the emotion. Didn't have an immediate effect because some of that stuff happened after.
Yeah, it takes a bit to boil down.
But...
Or simmer down.
One positive thing that came out of that game was TJ Oshie's hat trick. And I actually said before the game to you...
You did say before the
game. All I want out of this game is a TJ Oshie hat trick for his dad.
Yeah, you, his you first did, game back. You did call that before, so that's
I should have bet on it. And so that was really cool. That was really cool to see. And so, you know, the Caps had a weird game, and there's a lot of emotion, or negative emotion, but at least they had that positive emotion of being there for TJ. And it was kind of funny after the game, TJ was saying, like, it was getting kind of dumb, like, when they had the empty net open, because, like, guys, like, were getting the puck and, like, yelling his name to be like, here, I'm going to pass you the puck so you can get the Hattie. Like, he's just like, so I think that brought the room together a bit, just to have, like, you know, something positive coming out of that. And, like, they put the stickers on their helmets, like, for Coach, which was the nickname of his dad, and so Coach Osh. So, yeah, I mean, that was a really genuinely cool thing to happen in that game.
Yeah, it was a good story for TJ, and just a great way to commemorate it, and a great way to just show the closeness of the team, just the support around there, and just one of those, like, you love to see it moments.
Yeah, it was very cool. So I hope I'm not coming off as, like, totally biased, because, like, I agree Tom Wilson crosses the line in his career and deserves to be suspended at times. And I'm not just a blatant, like, he can do nothing wrong fan, but just I didn't see that isolated incident as suspendable. It's a shitty thing to do, for sure. But penalize him on the play, and then, anyway, so, yeah. I don't want to come across as, like, you know, Caps are the like, ideal of a team and can do nothing wrong. So anyway, I guess to cut the tension a bit, we've got a fan question. Fan, I guess, is a strong word, I guess. It's a friend of the show question from Ryan from the Hockey Talk podcast.
Hey guys, it's Ryan from Hockey Talk podcast. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you guys, I saw a satire story of the Rangers signing a UFC fighter to a one-day contract in order to fight Tom Wilson, but it got me thinking, what would you guys like to see your dream starting five for an off-the-face-off line brawl? You know, could be anyone. Could be UFC fighters, boxers, pro wrestlers. Well, let me know.
So, good question. Sean, you want to take that first? Who your starting lineup for a opening face-off brawl would be?
Yeah, so the thing for me is that, sure, you can go and take all these, you know, high-profile boxers, fighters, trained fighters, and everything, and put them on the ice, but that's the key thing there, is that they're going to be on the ice. Sure, they can fight on their feet on solid ground, but they're not really going to be able to be quite as effective on ice when they're trying to manage the balance and skating aspect. So I went with, you know, people with hockey pedigree. So, you know, if we're going for an opening face-off line brawl, I feel like you have to have the Hanson brothers up front. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, on defense, I can't remember if he's an actual defender or not in the movie, but, you know, someone like Doug Glatt's in there. even though I know he's not a defender, he's a winger, but Steve McIntyre, one of the enforcers for the Oilers, or, you know, enforcers for a lot of teams, but notably for the Oilers around 2010, on the other defense, and yeah, why not Ron Hextall in net? I feel like he'd yeah. He'd want to get involved pretty quickly.
Yeah. I also had Doug Glatt in my lineup. I had to look it up. He plays wing.
Okay.
I think he plays both, though.
I feel like he's both in front of the net defending too much for a winger at some point, but
yeah, because he takes one off the face.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I have him on left wing. On right wing, I've got Alexander Semin.
Oh, that's a good one.
For his known fighting prowess, the to bongos. Be able to play the bongos on the opponent. On at center, just because I think this would be funny to see, I've got Bartolo Colon, the pitcher in the MLB, because he is such a giant human. And, like, he's just such a nice guy. Just the sheer mass of him, I think it'd be funny to see him there. Just because it'd be goofy. And then on D, I hope you appreciate this. So I've got Claude Lemieux. And then on his D partner is Darren McCarty.
So we got three teams here, or one team's fighting itself.
Yeah, so they're
going to
fight each other. They'll fight each other, and then the winner can get involved with the other team. So, yeah, I thought it would be fun to have those two on the same team and to be able to scrap each other. So yeah, I mean, that's my starting five. I don't think we'll win the line brawl because...
Probably not.
Like, two of the guys can't fight at all. One of them's not a real person, and then two of them would fight each other. So yeah.
I mean, win the entertainment value side.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to see
you
two
got
teammates
seven playing
fight.
The bongo drums while the teammates are fighting in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would love to see that. So good question, Ryan. We'll have to find out how we stack up to what you would have picked. So yeah.
A decent segue here, since we're already on the Caps and Rangers, is to just segue right into the Rangers front office this week, which after the whole incident between Tom Wilson and Panarin and all them, the Rangers put out a statement. I referenced it as having a lot of Broadway drama, Broadway flair added to it to, you know, make it more interesting. And then the next day, they fired their GM and, what was he, the president of hockey operations, Davidson? So GM, yeah. Jeff Gorton's gone, as well as Davidson, John Davidson, I believe.
I think so, yeah. It's like his first year, wasn't it?
He's only been there for a couple of years. Like, he's pretty new to that organization.
Yeah, it was...
So...
Apparently unrelated.
Apparently unrelated. So that statement the Rangers put out was apparently more from ownership. That the GM and that Gorton and Davidson sort of tried to distance themselves from it, that the statement was more from ownership or higher up, and is more a testament to the owner, Jim Dolan, being unhappy with the direction of the team through this rebuild. We saw tweets that are citing that he's disappointed in the performance, that they underachieved this season. Which is just absolutely baffling to me, because the Rangers finished fifth in a division that has two of the last four cup winners, the Bruins, who made the cup final 2 years ago, and the Islanders, who were in the conference final last year. They had a positive goal differential, and they're in the second year of a rebuild, and they finished fifth in the division.
With, like a rookie goalie.
With a rookie goalie. Like, that just absolutely baffles me, that I really feel like this guy should have just stayed with his meddling with his middling Knicks again instead of trying to find his way back into hockey.
Yeah, it was so stupid. Like, just objectively dumb, because, yeah, like, they were making amazing quick progress in a short amount of time. Like, they've really turned their team around with bringing in some great free agents. I mean... Panarin was an amazing signing for them. Like, he gets paid a lot, but, like, holy shit, did he change that team around. And Zibanejad is amazing. Their goaltending looks like it's going to be great. You know, they got Adam Fox. Like,
yeah, this is the team
they kept the right guys. Like, when they were shipping guys out, like, they kept Kreider. Like, they kept some core guys. And I just don't understand it, because... Yeah. How fast do you expect it to go?
That's the thing. He's like he said, it's not going quick enough. And I guess, I mean, sure, the Rangers were a little bit kind of in the middle for a few years before they really committed to a rebuild. But, like, those years don't count in this process.
If they had wild cards this year, like, they probably would have made it.
Pretty close. Like, I don't have the standings in front of me, but they had to have been right on track to be there, especially because of how close they were. Like, they were in the mix until, like, the last five games.
Yeah, and if they didn't play, like, the division of death every game.
Yeah, if they had, you know, early season Dallas and Chicago and Detroit, you know, they probably would have feasted a little bit there. You know?
Yeah,
I mean, I guess
sure.
They didn't have half those teams in the division to begin with, but...
Yeah, but like, I mean, they would have played him twice.
Yeah, they would have played out of division stuff. Forgetting about that already. but
so it's crazy to me that they did this.
And I saw another thing from Dolan that he didn't like the direction of the team, that he's kind of wanting a tougher team. So like, he's jealous of the Islanders basically after seeing the Islanders last year. And it's like, that's not really a reason to scrap the entire GM.
Like, and also, like, what a way to alienate your fans. Say that I want to be, like, our biggest rival, the Islanders. Like, do you think Rangers fans want to hear that? Like, oh, I wish we were more like the Islanders.
Yeah, I
think Rangers fans would be pissed at that. Like, what the hell are you talking about? We don't want to be like them. We're better than them. Like, I think, like, they've got a high-skill team. They got a fast team. They've got an amazing, dynamic blue line. Got a great young goalie. Like, why compare yourself to the Islanders?
Yeah.
Like, you want to be, like, the Rangers should, like, I mean, if I'm in a Rangers mindset, right? Like, they want to be, like, they think they are the premier New York team. The Islanders should be comparing themselves to us. Like,
yeah, I mean,
why would you say that?
This is coming from Brooksy, you know. Credible person. But
yeah, I mean,
a quote from there, it's like, recent mismatches against the Islanders highlighted the team's deficiencies, and that led to the firings. That, like, you know, a couple of games against the Islanders, back-to-back losses,
oh no,
highlight the team's deficiencies enough to fire the GM. I mean, okay,
two losses,
actually might have been three.
Oh no, okay, that definitely warranted that.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously this is going to be in the guy's mind ahead of time if it's not going to change that quickly, but that's really the stance you want to take, that, like, you couldn't just tell the GM that you wanted a grittier guy on the fourth line. You got to fire him in the, like, 2 years into a rebuild.
Yeah, that's going exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Like, the team's super competitive. Like, yeah, they miss playoffs, but, like, just, and they're in the toughest division, and they look like amazing. The future is really bright. Like, I don't know how you could look at that team and be like,
not fast enough.
We're not heading in the right direction here.
And the other thing is that, has this guy even watched hockey in the last 5 years to know the direction the league's heading? Because
probably not.
Like, how much more grit and toughness and you know, Islanders-esque players does he want? Because is he going to go and tell Chris Drury, who's now the GM, to just scrap all the skilled, talented players and bring in this, you know, team that would have won 10 years ago but won't make it now?
That would be, I mean, I guess, like, the grit physicality still has a place, because, like, the Blues won that way. The Caps had a definitely a big part of that in there.
The Lightning did win until they got a little bit of that.
Yeah, when they added, like, you know, Maroon, Coleman, those types of guys. So, like, there still is that aspect, but it's, like, that's, I mean, the Rangers, I think, like, it surprised me, but, like, I think the Rangers had the most fights this season. You know, they might not be, like, the most physical team, but, like, they were exciting to watch, and they, like, I thought fans would have been interested in that, and as the owner, you'd think, like, hey, that makes money. Why don't we keep doing this? Like, I know you want to win, but, like, you got to look at, like, not every team is going to finish first.
Yeah, like, it's
just a reality.
Baffling.
And I think, like, I guess, like, Drury was kind of being groomed, and I guess maybe it's, like, looking for any reason to get him in there, but I don't know. It seems like a really snap decision, and... like, I don't know, I guess maybe that's how he does business. I don't know how you're successful doing that, but, like, seems like a very knee-jerk reaction to, you know, if it's true, like, three games against the Islanders, like, who the hell cares? Like, yeah, I'm sure, like, people are upset that they lost to the Rangers, to the Islanders, but, like, the Islanders are a better team right now. And,
yeah,
you know, they're,
exactly.
they're trying to get a cup. Whereas the Rangers should be focused on, you know, continuing their meteoric fucking rise through the standings. Like, yeah, it's baffling to me. It's crazy. Like, wow. So if the Oilers lost, like, three in a row to Calgary, it'd be like, you know, they're not firing Kenny Holland.
No. No, I mean, like, I guess, like, it wasn't just those games. Like, this would have been, you know, it was just, this was just highlighting issue, of course. But, yeah, to have that be the main, like, thing cited, it's like, no, that wouldn't happen. Like, Edmonton loses 3 games to Calgary, then everyone's pissed off and, you know, bag skate or something. Like,
yeah, I'm kind of surprised that the GM got fired before, like, they made a coaching change. Like, I would have thought, like, the ownership might have put pressure on them to be like, hey, get rid of Quinn.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is just the fans, to be fair, but a lot of the fans aren't quite happy with him and his utilization of especially young, developing talent.
Yeah.
So you figure, like, he would have been shown the door before the GM, because that's usually what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the Rangers are the most valuable NHL franchise, so, like, they could have got any coach they wanted, probably.
And there's a ton of good coaches on the market right now.
Yeah. Like, they could have got, like, Gallant or
they could have just thrown money at a couple of those guys, right? Like, Boudreau would have been amazing for that team.
Yeah.
Like, his
style.
Yeah,
the running gun.
Like, holy crap.
Yeah, so I it's kind of shocked me that, like, they didn't look at doing that. And maybe that will come. Like, maybe Drury will do that still.
I've read,
but it's just
that,
like,
Quinn is one of their guys. Either Drury or the owner, I can't remember, but he's kind of in their circle. So it's kind of like a, you know, we'll keep the guy around because he's, like, close with me or whatever.
Well, maybe that's what got Davidson fired. Maybe he's like, I want to fire the coach. And Dolan's like, no. which would be dumb, but yeah, very shocking news. Like, I saw that and I was like, wow, Tom Wilson got, you know, 2 men fired. Like, what the hell? But unrelated, which is, like, I don't know if that's better or worse, just, like, yeah, it's very, very bizarro news coming out of New York.
I wonder if this sets the rebuild back. Because usually,
I think it does.
You bring a new GM in, and it typically signals, like, a new rebuild or a new direction that takes a couple years to recover from. Like, is Drury going to continue on with the path that Gorton was on, just with more grit players brought in, or is it going to be a whole new direction?
I think it will set them back, because it's like, yeah, it's just a totally different person, and
yeah, because he's going to have his own ideas, his own people, his own.
Well, there's
going
to be immense
team.
Pressure too from Dolan to change if that rumor about, you know, the direction of the team was true. Like, there's going to be such pressure to match whatever he's looking for. And so, you know, if that involves, like, trading away, like, highly skilled players, like, there could be a real feast going on with teams trying to get some of those players. And I think it'd be really sad for Rangers fans, because it's like, you were like, you know, going up and up and up and up and up, and then, like, well, now we're going to be stuck in mediocrity, I think.
Yeah, but just, like, I mean, because this guy made a joke about it earlier, but he also owns the Knicks. And they've been basically just a mediocre to middling NBA franchise for two decades.
I need to match that energy.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it
sucks.
You know, that's kind of, I think that's where the guy focused his energy on, was more on the basketball side of things. And, you know, they never really got any... any progress or success anywhere, and now he moves over to the hockey side for a bit, and this happens.
Yeah, I mean, we came into the season saying that the Rangers would be one of the most fun teams to watch, and they were. Like, they were, I mean, probably part of it's because both of us had Mika Zibanejad in one of our hockey pools, so we had a very, you know, we had an interest in them succeeding, but I watched quite a bit of their games just to see what Mika Zibanejad was doing, and they were fun to watch.
Yeah.
And doing well. And, like, I think they would have continued to get better and better as other teams in the Metro get worse. So, yeah, it's just very shocking. That's like, how could you not see that in the cards for the team? And I think that's what a lot of, like, hockey insiders were saying, too. Like, what the hell? Like, this team was, like, poised to be really good in, like, 2 seasons, you know?
Yep. Yeah, and that's the, you mentioned that sentiment from hockey insiders, like, some of them talking, even reporting other owners or, like, high-ranking officials on other teams that are just like, wow, Yeah. You know, like they're surprised.
What a snap
like,
show.
Where the hell did this come from?
Yeah. So very bizarre. Yeah, it's just shocking. Very shocking that was announced. I guess the kind of the other big news story of the week was, is Connor McDavid going to hit 100 points? And spoiler, he did.
He hit in 53 games.
Yeah.
He gets his 100th point in his 53rd game, and that is outstanding. Like, that is on pace for 1.8 points per game right now. He's having the best offensive season in 25 years since Mario Lemieux in 95-96.
Might have heard of him.
Yeah, you might have heard of him. He's a decent player. But what he's done in this season, he's just getting better every single year. And now, I mean, you know, he's just hit 153 this year. What's he going to do next year? Is he going to hit 150? Is he going to get 100 points in 50 games and 150 points?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I mean,
yeah, it's
he seems to just be able to bend the game to his will and just get points. And he's getting better every year. So it wouldn't surprise me if he somehow manages to find a way to get his 100th point in less than 50 games next year.
Yeah, especially if he's still got like the level of support on the Oilers. And if their power play is as good as it is like last season and this season, I could definitely see him keeping that same pace up. You know, Draisaitl and him have like a really, because they like the last, I don't know how long it's been, but like it seems like when they were really pushing for this 100, because it was like a team thing, like the team was trying to get it. I think it was more valuable. Like, I think Draisaitl even said, like, I think we want it to happen more than he does.
Oh, yeah. Connor just wanted to get ready for the playoffs. Everyone else wanted Connor to get 100 points.
Yeah. And so, like, if they're still around, like, they were, like, Draisaitl was playing with him more often, is what my point was there. Like, so, like, they were kind of stacking up a bit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. They did do that for a bit. They put Draisaitl McDavid on the first line for a little bit more than they usually do, and had Nugent Hopkins centering the second line instead.
Yeah. So I think, like, Nugent Hopkins brings up a great point, is he's going to be a guy that they obviously have to prioritize in the offseason. And what do they do with Tyson Barrie? You know, because Klefbom, like, what is his status? Is he going to play hockey again or no?
It's hard to say. And I don't think he even knows, because, like, ultimately the procedure he just had on his shoulder, it's to help fix like an ongoing arthritic issue that he's had since he was a teenager. And he doesn't even know if he's going to be able to play again, or if he does, if he's going to be able to play at the same level that he was before. Because he basically said in one of his media availabilities when he was in Edmonton recently, he's like, yeah, I could go and I could play again, but it's like all it takes is one wrong hit to throw it out of whack again, and I can't, you know, live normally anymore. You know, like putting on a shirt, raising your shoulder above your arms, above your head to put on a shirt or carry groceries around. You know, that's kind of the state that it's at right now. So he's a big question mark on if he's going to be able to come back and if he wants to take that risk to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, depending on how that goes, I think the Tyson and Barrie experiment really worked. It kind of took some time, but
once he settled in, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's found a little niche with the team. He's obviously not the greatest defensively, that's never really changed, but he's found a little niche, and there's enough support around him this season to kind of cover up his lapses and let his strengths shine through.
Yeah, and like that kind of happened with the Leafs too. It's like once Babs was out and Barrie played the power play in Toronto, like it kind of found success near the end of the season and it started rolling, but it just took a while to get there and he didn't get the opportunity. And in Edmonton, like once it started popping off, like it's been a ride. So, I think if they can keep him for the power play, or if somebody else is able to dish from the point to the same level of success, and if Nugent Hopkins sticks around and is able to kind of be that flexible guy, whether he's on the second line or not, or because like if they can stack up the first with Draisaitl, you know, Nugent Hopkins is a guy you can trust on that second line.
Exactly.
So, I think, yeah, depending if they keep him, I think that'll have a really big impact of if Connor does as well next season.
For me, like, Nugent Hopkins is absolutely the number one priority to re-sign because he's a UFA this offseason. He needs to stick around because they need a center like him. Someone like he's versatile. Like you said, he can play anywhere in that lineup. He's a lot more defensively responsible than McDavid and Draisaitl right now, which is also a very good foil to have on one of those two lines just to balance that out and just give them a little bit more of a, you know, reliable presence to, you know, solidify and, you know, help McDavid and Draisaitl be more offensive because then they have someone who can kind of cover it.
Yeah.
But they need to keep him around. He's just, you know, fan favorites, don't want to see him go, and just such an important piece of that team, you know, the longest serving player at this point.
Yeah, and he plays PK and PP, so super valuable. Like, that's going to be really hard to replace.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think anyone's quite ready to step into that spot. So, yeah, definitely got to prioritize him. It's just how much is he going to want? And is it going to make sense?
Yeah. So right now he's making $6 million, which is probably not an unreasonable amount for the next contract. I can see a little bit of a raise because at this contract, the $6 million one was signed years ago. But the Oilers actually do have a ton of cap space getting freed up this offseason, and they could probably afford to match plus a little bit more for Nuge's next contract here.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of the key is, can their power play stay as hot as it was this season and last season? And can Nugent Hopkins stick around and kind of balance out the forward group? If those two things happen, I think, yeah, McDavid has probably a really good shot of just exploding in a full season again. But yeah, I mean, he has been so fun to watch this season. And there's been so many highlights. You can't even count them. And, you know, it's just like he's just like he uses his everything to his advantage, like his speed, his puck handling, and just like his little shifts in speed. Like he'll like go like breakneck speed and then just like
stop
and like cut in and then get like an easy shot on the net. Yeah. And it's like roofed and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, he's so agile and it works in both directions, like accelerating and decelerating. He can just use so much of that and just toy with the opposition.
Yeah. And then like his vision too, like he just is able to find.
He doesn't even have to be looking to make an amazing play.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been fun. And I think you and I both said that he would do it, you know, when the kind of race started. And so feel good about that. Yeah. Do you think he gets the heart?
Oh, he's runaway winner with that. There's no way he doesn't.
Yeah.
By far carrying the team. And I mean, we know the heart kind of goes best player versus most valuable, and McDavid is by far the best player in the league this season.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of the same argument people use when Draisaitl was the winner. It's just like, you know, he had more points.
Yeah.
And so now it's, yeah, McDavid has more points.
So it's McDavid's again.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so very impressive to him.
Yeah.
And just a note about the Oilers going into playoffs is, I mean, we talked about Mike Smith, obviously Connor McDavid and Draisaitl have been clutch. James Neal has kind of been like quietly heating up a little bit going into playoffs. He got a goal tonight. It's been kind of cool to see, like he's like the veteran.
Yeah. And so he's been
coming into playoffs is cool.
He hasn't been like the most productive, but he's been generating chances and he's a lot more visible on the ice. You know, he's still sitting only at four, you know, probably 5 goals, 4 assists in 26 games a season, but he kind of disappeared for a while. And I think he got hit by COVID in the middle of the season and it really took a lot out of him and it took him a while to bounce back. But you're totally right. In the last, you know, 5-10 games here, he's been a lot more visible. He almost had a goal and almost had another one like a minute later in today's game. But he's been like generating chances and just more engaged with the game. And it's been a good omen heading into the playoffs to have someone like him start to heat up and start to find his game, because they're going to be relying on a depth player like that to help bolster the lineup all the way through.
Yeah, it's good timing. Going, you know, it's the right time to heat up. That was really hard to watch Koskinen. 4 goals in 4 shots. That was rough.
I was very close to picking up Koskinen in fantasy leagues for the extra start, and I'm very, very glad that I did not trust him enough to. I did not trust the matchup enough to follow through on that.
Yeah, that was rough. But I mean, he started again today, right? Did he bounce back a bit?
And as we're here talking about McDavid, I think he just got the overtime winner.
Nice.
But yes, yeah. Koskinen started today, and he looked a lot better. You know, only gave up 3 goals in the whole game this time.
Was how many shots though? 3?
4.
yeah. Improvement. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the Oilers have been definitely looking good lately. And then I guess the other team that's kind of been fun to watch lately is Minnesota Wild. They've been kind of having this, like, never out of it mentality, and they've been battling back a lot in third periods where, like, they're losing and they come back and end up winning. Kirill Kaprizov has been just, like he's been so fun. I've been talking about him all season, but, like, he's just been so fun to watch and, like, so instrumental in all of these comebacks. Like, he just does something to, like, spark it, whether it's, like, a goal or assist or, like, a sweet play, and it's just been really fun to watch them battle back in every game they're in. Like, the Capitals played like that in 2018, where, you know, any game they're out of, it's like they're never out of it. And they're kind of my dark horse to make a push at this point. I think they've got a really tough kind of, you know, matchup to get out of, I guess. Whoever that is in the first round, but whether that's Vegas or Minnesota or Vegas or Colorado, sorry.
How would they play against themselves, though?
Congratulations. You just played yourself. But yeah, I mean, they're kind of my dark horse to make a bit of a push because of that play style where it's like no matter how many goals they're down, like they came back against Vegas and like forced OT and won in OT. And so, yeah, just props to them because it's like this is the time of year where you got to start playing that way, and they're doing it.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.